You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier, and it's my pleasure to be with you for the next 2 hours. And, of course, this is on the second Wednesday of the month. We always have people in from Hutchison Legal, and we have Madeleine Pelser and Tegan Howard. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good morning, John.
That's afternoon,
sorry.
And I'm Alan.
Sorry.
Anyway, that's okay. Yeah. Look, last time we had an inquiry from a man, obviously a guy. He was in a relationship and a child was born. He believed the child was his, and so, well, he never questioned it, and then he paid maintenance until the child was about 14. He's now found out via a child had, because of some illness, the child had to have some tests, and so did the parents, and he found out that he's not possibly the father, or he's 99% not the father. Mm. Now, he says, I've been paying this money for 14 years. What do I do to get it back? Can I get it back? And if so, what do I have to do to get it back?
Hmm. Well, this is a matter that's regulated by the Family Law Act, which is a federal court jurisdiction. And since they're the ones who make orders regarding the maintenance of children, I would think that he would have to go back to the family, or go to the family court, right, to get an order that he stop, well, he couldn't, can stop paying maintenance, and also an order that the mother repay the maintenance that he has paid, or the actual father pay the maintenance in arrears. It would be up to the family court to make orders that he be repaid if they chose to do that, or they might look at all the circumstances and just say, well, there's no hope that the mother can pay it back, so I'm afraid that's just the way it is.
Tough luck.
Yeah. Hmm. But certainly he could make an application to the family court for reimbursement or repayment.
Could he automatically stop payment the minute he believed it, or has he still got that court order that he has to pay it until he can go back to the family court?
If there was a court order, then he shouldn't stop. He should get it varied. But if he's just been paying out of the goodness of his heart under a misapprehension, then he could stop.
All right, so let's just tease this out a little bit further. So what happens, and it hasn't been asked in this case, but what would happen if, after it had happened, after he found out the child wasn't his, and he goes to the family court, and the family court saying, well, you shouldn't have been paying all along, but there's very little hope of getting any money, the lady's got no money. But then she bragged to somebody and said to them, oh, I got 14 years out of that, and I knew he wasn't the father. Would that be fraud?
Well, he might have a civil action against her. If the family court wasn't prepared to order that she repay the money,
right,
he might have a civil action for obtaining a financial advantage by deception.
Right. So,
which is also a crime, actually. So,
Would that go through the family court, or would that go through the magistrate or the county?
The magistrates or county, or as possibly even the police, if she really did know that he wasn't the father, and, you know, calculated to get money out of him for all those years. That is obtaining a financial advantage by deception.
Because this person thinks or believes, and I mean, we're only going on what this person said, and it's only one side of the case. He believes that she may have known, but the other guy didn't have any money, the one who was the father, and so she chose B, because she knew that he had a better income, and so would that then be fraud or still illegal?
Yes. Well, if she did it on purpose, absolutely. It's not fraud. Yeah, it's the offence is obtaining a financial advantage by deception, and I mean, it might even be that he could join the actual father to the action.
Mm.
Right.
Because if he was the one with the money, whether or not he was party to the deception would be a factor. But It might be that he could bring a third party proceeding against the father.
Right. Now, I see you've also got some other things here, which might lead into the next question. Mm. Supposing the guy, in this case, the child had to have some tests because of illness, yes, and that's how it came up.
Yes.
Supposing a guy is, and I'm not suggesting women do this on purpose, I don't want to get into that. We're not here morally. We're here to talk about legal matters.
Yes, yes.
What would happen then if some guy had a child, 15, 16, was of the belief that it wasn't his, but the mother disagrees? What rights does he have to get a DNA test or something about that to prove that the child is his? What rights has he got, and what rights has the mother got and the child got to refuse?
Do you want to talk about
this? Yeah, sure. It's a twofold question. That's fine. So it's not strict. It's not illegal to refuse to have a paternity test. He can refuse.
Yep.
However, the family court could draw an inference that he potentially could be the father, and in that case, they could make an order for him to pay that child maintenance. So because he hasn't refuted that he's not the father,
yep,
the court could potentially make that order, in that instance.
No, but going down another track now, mm-hmm. supposing...
Could the mother compel?
Could the father compel the mother to have the child DNA tested?
Mm-hmm. Nobody can be compelled except by the family court.
Right.
So he would need an order from the family court, and if she refused then to submit the child to a test, that could be taken negatively.
Yep. And then the court could order that they have to have a DNA test.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And then if they refuse, that then it could order in his favour as a result of that refusal.
Oh, right.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 22 minutes past 12 and 25 degrees. And we have the Legal Hour with us, and we have Madeleine and... Tegan. And Madeleine, you want to talk about the Guardianship Act?
I would, Alan, and I'm so sorry for getting your name wrong at the beginning.
Nah, that's now, all right. You can call me anything.
Except late for breakfast. Okay, so I'm quite excited about a new act, which is the... Not many people would be, but...
Always gets me worried when the solicitors say they're really excited about a new act.
So it's the new Guardianship and Administration Act, and it came into force on the 1st of March this year, and it's the legislation which underpins the appointment of a guardian or administrator of a person who is unable to manage their own financial, legal or personal affairs. And
for any reason, or is it?
Well, it's when they've lost the capacity to do so.
Yep.
So until this act came in, it was just a matter of... a family member or a residential care facility or hospital or whoever was panicking that there was no one appointed. And this is where it's important to have powers of attorney,
yep,
because if no one's appointed, this act comes into operation, and it's possible then for public guardians and state trustees to be appointed.
Yep.
But previously you just needed medical evidence that the person had lost the capacity to manage their own affairs, and VCAT would appoint either a family member or the public advocate or state trustees. Mm. But since this act follows the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which was ratified by Australia in 2008, and it promotes the dignity, equality and autonomy of people with a disability, and it brings in all sorts of principles which VCAT now need to take account of, and that they are... Their aim is to support the person to make their own decisions instead of taking away their ability as much as possible to support them. And
to let them make the decision?
Yeah, that's right. So for as long as possible and as much as possible, they need to be in control. VCAT needs to look at the will and preferences of the person and all the relationships that they have around them and all the other options that are available, like mediation and negotiation and those sorts of things, rather than just bang, you can't make the decisions anymore, that's it, public administrator's been appointed.
So prior to this, it was a lot easier to get someone appointed?
I think it's going to shift the whole way this legislation works.
Yep.
And people are being empowered rather than having their power taken away.
Yep.
And I mean, I've seen some sad situations where, say, someone's had a stroke and all of a sudden the family members don't want to know them anymore and they've been put in residential care facilities. Guardians have been appointed and all without their power or say. And then they've recovered from the stroke and here they are locked up almost. Without any say over their whole lives.
And a lot of assets would have been sold off.
Oh, exactly. And it's just it's been tragic. Really? I've seen some tragic circumstances. But this act will prevent that.
So this is a good act.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's just a huge shift in empowering people to be supported as long as they can to make their own decisions. And Tegan will tell you about a lovely thing that the act's got at the moment.
Yeah, I guess also with empowering people to, you know, stay, you know, making their own decisions and in that kind of support. The Act mentions companion animals and support animals about 10 times.
Right.
Yeah, so it recognises the importance of dogs or cats or other sort of animals in helping people, you know, emotionally support them and that kind of thing. So, that's a really new development in this kind of area of law, which is really interesting.
So, it's exciting for all areas. I just wanted to point out the difference between personal, or financial and legal is obvious, but personal means where they live and who visits them and all that sort of thing, which can have far-reaching consequences.
Absolutely.
If somebody's got power without having to really consider what the person wants.
Mm-hmm.
So now they have to, they must. The language has changed from may to must consider the will and preferences.
A big change,
isn't it? Yes, that's right. The will and preferences of the person, the proposed represented person, and all their relationships and people and animals in their lives have to be considered.
Does legislation say who they must be? Like, whether can they be a family member or are they not allowed to be a family member?
They can be a family member. They've always been able to be a family member, but now that's encouraged.
Yep.
Subject to the relationships, if you've got someone saying, well, that's a toxic relationship, though VCAT will obviously take that into account. But the legislation prefers family over public.
So this legislation, though, it talks like it's not, it's really for VCAT. You don't have to go to court to prove any of this.
VCAT, that's the Victorian Civil and Administrative Tribunal makes these appointments under the Guardianship and Administration Act.
Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And we have our legal people with us from Hutchison Legal, and we're talking all things legal. Someone's going to talk about driving with thongs.
Yes, I thought we'd switch gears, so to speak, and ask the question, is it illegal to drive with thongs in Australia? And this is something I'm always on my son about. He likes to drive in scuffs.
Yep.
But in actual fact, it isn't illegal to drive either barefooted or in thongs, no. But there is an obligation to wear footwear which is conducive to safety. And in any accident, police will investigate whether you were wearing footwear which was of optimum safety. So it's not a good idea to drive in thongs or long spiky heels.
Yeah.
But it is apparently preferable to drive in bare feet than in thongs.
Because I thought the idea, pardon me, of being in shoes was that you had the hard, you know, you could push harder on your foot
exactly.
to get on the brake.
Absolutely.
But I guess now a lot of the cars are disc brakes anyway, aren't they? And they're power assisted and all this sort of stuff. So.
Yeah, but it's still not sensible in an accident to have bare feet or, you know, for your feet not to be protected or to have the maximum effect on the pedal. So, but it is not actually prohibited by the road traffic regulations.
All right, so while we're talking about that, what's the score like? No, I'm not going to say that because I don't want to get myself into trouble. Mm-hmm. So somebody pops into a shop, buys a coffee on the way home and starts to eat a cake and drink a coffee on the way home. What's the score with that?
I believe it is actually illegal to eat or drink in the car while you're driving. Similar sort of distraction to texting or you know, drink driving, that kind of thing. One of my friends actually did get pulled over and fined for, I believe, having a Macca's meal. Yeah, in the car, and she was eating it, and the police saw her drive past and, yeah, fined her. I don't know how much the fine was, but...
That puts paid to the drive-through restaurant.
Yeah, no.
Well, that's right. What's the use?
Yeah.
I guess with all these things, though, it's a case of... you know, what the police do at this time, but still, it's not much good breaking the law because you're only setting yourself up for something to go bad.
Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to The Voice of the Valley, Yarra Valley FM 99.1. And we have our legal people with us, and we're talking all sorts of things legal. And if you'd like, if you've got a question you want to answer, we'd need to know it pretty quickly on 59-615-991, 59-615-991, and we'll put these people under pressure and we'll get an answer for you. But in the meantime, let's talk about wills. If a person doesn't bother to leave a will, what happens?
Yes, well, this can be a very fraught circumstance, depending on family relationships and so forth.
When money comes into it.
Absolutely.
Doesn't always go well.
No. Brings out the worst in people.
Yep.
But if you don't have a will outlining your wishes and how you want your estate distributed, then your estate will be distributed according to the laws of intestacy. And that they are very strict rules. They used to be that a third of your estate would go to your spouse and two-thirds to your children.
Yeah.
But that changed in about 2018. And now if you have children with your spouse, the whole of your estate will go to your spouse. If you don't have a spouse, it'll go to your children. If you don't have either of those, there's various, you know, degrees of siblings, aunts, uncles, grandparents, cousins, and that's a strict table of people it'll go to. And very lastly, if there's absolutely no one that can be found, the government will receive your estate.
What a surprise!
Yeah. But what can happen is people don't realise that they are married to their spouse until a decree becomes absolute. So even if there's a month in which it's decree nisi, even in that period they're still married to their spouse. So we had a case in the office recently where someone was married to someone 40 years ago and had a child with them. Then he had another partner and had children with them. And then he had a final partner and had a child with her. And what he did in his homemade will was leave all his estate, and he meant to say to his last daughter, but he didn't put her name in. So it left an intestacy. Mm. And then up popped the first wife, who he hadn't seen for 40 years and hadn't divorced, and said, well, I'm entitled to it all, which is in fact the case. Then popped the middle children and said, but hang on, what about us? And we've seen our father all this time. And of course the daughter, who was actually living in his house, then had to we actually ended up settling it, but the wife wasn't going to give up, and she had to sell the house that he'd meant to leave to her, and it all had to be split six ways.
Gee, that's terrible.
That's because he didn't leave a proper will, and didn't he? And home, yeah, he tried to leave a will, but he made a mistake. So,
and what would happen if one of those children had never seen him? Are they still entitled to a share?
Well, that's right. Unless, the one child of the wife, the first child, hadn't seen him for the 40 years either.
But she's still entitled to a share.
Well, under the laws of intestacy, so unless everybody makes claims against the estate that they're entitled to more, which was the option the final daughter had, and she was obviously entitled to more, but she decided it was all too hard, and she did the nice thing and split it up, and so it was settled. But I mean, she had a claim against the estate. I don't think the first daughter would have had an actual claim, but under the intestacy laws, she did.
Yeah. And so, I guess the other problem is, unless you're careful with these wills, that it can you can waste a lot of the inheritance fighting each other,
absolutely,
can't you? And then you don't get anything anyway.
This was a small estate, so everybody ended up with 40,000 or something. Yeah, yeah, it was a very small estate. But that just shows, if you don't have a valid, properly prepared will, things can go really awry. I mean, if with the intestacy laws, they're now fairer in that the spouse that you have children with gets it all. If you're still with that spouse and you don't have any other children, that can work. But it's, you have to be sure. You can't rely on the intestacy laws to reflect what you want.
Mm. Well, I know somebody who's like he was married and they had two children, and then he went off with another woman.
Exactly.
But he won't divorce his ex-wife, and for religious reasons she can't divorce him.
So, it's fraught.
So technically they're still married, aren't
exactly,
they?
Exactly. And she would technically be entitled to the whole estate.
Fair.
Yes.
If they'd had a financial state, a financial settlement, would that still be the same?
Like before he died.
Oh yeah, somewhere along the line.
A binding financial agreement.
Yeah.
Would impact unless somebody made a claim for further provision, in which case, the Supreme Court doesn't have to take notice of the family court, so they'll make their decisions separately. So that's risky as well.
So the major thing is you need to make sure you've got a current will. You need to make sure that you name people in the will, don't you?
That it's valid. That's right. And we obviously prefer lawyers to prepare wills because we make sure that they are absolutely valid.
Yeah,
I won't say watertight because there's always the possibility of a claim, but... Yep. Valid, yeah.
And you know, one of the problems is, as I just said, that you can wind up spending a lot of that money that should have gone to people going to the lawyers.
Mm. That's right. Mm-hmm. We have lots of Agatha Christie stories.
Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Right. Just quickly, we're going to talk about reverse mortgages. We hear a lot about them. What are they, and how good are they?
Mm, yeah, that's right, Alan. Basically, it's a mechanism where you can sell a percentage of your property that you own outright to a company that can then, you know, lend you some money, perhaps if you wanted to stay in your home longer in retirement or something like that. So there's certain, you know, types of options you can choose. You could get a lump sum from this company, or, you know, you can have money over time or something like that.
And there's no, is there no payments being made on it until the person has to sell the house?
Depends on the terms of the contract, yeah.
But you can get those.
Correct. And you can even buy back your percentage of the property that you have sold.
Oh.
Yeah. So there are provisions for that. Yeah.
So it's just a way of keeping older people in their home, aren't they, that really need... Well, a lot of people are, what they call it, asset rich and...
cash poor.
Mm. Cash poor. Mm.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you very much, ladies, for coming. We've enjoyed, as always. We'll be back for the second Wednesday in
thanks, Alan.
In April. Thanks very
Thank
much.
You. Thank